Thank you, everybody. First of all, I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us, to learn more about our company. Hopefully, by the end of the presentation, you'll have some additional information for you to go by. So before I get started, since I'm going to be making forward-looking statements, I want to make sure that everybody has read through this statement here. At the same time, what we strongly encourage is that all of you consult either our website, CitiusPharma.com, or SEC.com, where you can plug in our symbol, CTXR, and get all the information that that you would need on a company. An informed investor is really the best type of investor that a company can have. So again, thank you for taking the time to be with us. So let me give you some highlights about the company. So we're in a much different position probably than most companies, in a sense that we are a biotech pharma company. Mm-hmm. We are considered to be pre-revenue at this point, but hopefully before the end of the year, we'll start to be revenue producing. The reason for that is because of our pipeline and the products that are in our pipeline. The lead product is Lymphir, which is an IL-2 diphtheria toxin fusion protein for cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. What I should highlight for you about this, about Lymphir, is that it has a PDUFA date, which for those of you who don't know what that means, the PDUFA date means that the FDA has given us an approval date of August 13th, 2024, for approval in CTCL. Minilock, which was our lead asset and still is a lead asset of ours for the longest time, has the potential to be the first and only FDA-approved product to salvage or save infected central venous catheters. It has tremendous potential as a result of that, and that drug now has completed its phase 3 trial, and we'll have a top-line data readout either in May or June of this year. Halo-Lido, which is far afield from what we normally have in our portfolio, but that's something that we decided to keep in order to be able to monetize it for the shareholders, has the potential to be the first and only FDA-approved prescription therapy for the treatment of hemorrhoids. The market segments that we compete in are significant in terms of their potential. The CTCL market, while it's a small market, it has a lot of attractiveness to it due to its small size in terms of our ability to be able to penetrate the market and achieve highly profitable revenues. The CURBSI-CLABSI market, which is catheter-related bloodstream infection markets where Minilock would be, is again a tremendous opportunity for us because it is the one and only drug in that market potentially. And with that, we believe that the potential for it is somewhere around $1.8 billion, maybe possibly $2 billion, half of it in the U.S., half of it outside the U.S. There is no really, even though we say greater than $2 billion for the prescription hemorrhoid market, I firmly believe anybody coming in with the first drug in here that's a prescription drug approved by the FDA is going to have a multi-billion dollar product on their hands. So our cash position is $20.3 million as of 12/31, with a runway through August of 2024. Something I want to highlight for you that separates us from everybody else in this hotel and for the next 1,000 meetings that you go to, and that is that we have our own money invested in the company, $26.5 million to be precise. I have invested $22.5 million of my own money, and Myron Holubiak, the co-founder of the company with me, has put $4 million in the company. It's headline news in Barron's when somebody invests $1 million. So I think I should be in Barron's. We should be in Barron's every other week, if at all possible. So we do have value-driving cases coming up this year. The Minilock phase 3 trial top-line data readout is expected, again, within the second quarter of this year. And then we have a Lymphir BLA PDUFA August 13, 2024, and we expect to commercialize the drug in the last quarter of this year. So sometimes I call these our mugshots, but this is our team. I should highlight, first of all, you see Myron Holubiak, who used to be the president of Roche Laboratories, co-founder of the company and vice chairman. I do want to draw your attention to Dr. Myron Tschutschman, who joined us almost probably now at this point 2.5 years ago. Dr. Tschutschman spent 23 years at Roswell Park in Buffalo as the chief of lymphoma. He published 180 papers in lymphoma. He's considered to be a global KOL with a worldwide reputation. He then spent 5 years at Celgene as vice president in charge of lymphoma and myeloma. Our team and the team that we have, I need to highlight this for you, is all professionals. We do not have a training program. We do not have management interns. We don't have anything like that. We have nothing but solid professionals with a great deal of experience. Every person that you see up there has a great deal of experience in the pharma industry, and that's been our trademark all along. That's the way we believe we can continue to operate the company. So let me take you through Mino-Lok quickly here. So as I said before, the phase 3 trial top-line data is anticipated in the second quarter. We basically, what we address with Mino-Lok are the complications, discomfort, and cost of central venous catheter removal and replacement. We did have positive phase 2B data that indicated strong safety and efficacy. The FDA gave us we worked out a phase 3 protocol with them. That trial was completed in December of 23rd. We're now undergoing all the data being analyzed and assembled. We expect, again, second quarter top-line results. There were 241 patients enrolled in this trial. There were 109. The trial measured failure events. It was an event-driven trial, so there were 109 catheter failure events observed. Clinical sites were in the U.S. mostly, and then at the end of the trial, in order to get it really completed and bring it over the finish line, we moved that trial to India, where we were able to accomplish that. The primary endpoint is a comparison of time to catheter failure event. Treatment cycle is 6 weeks. So the market itself is really the long-term central venous catheter. There's about 4 million central venous catheters inserted annually in the United States. And for those of you who maybe have never seen a catheter, let me just pull one out here for you. So this is what a catheter looks like. So basically what happens is it gets surgically implanted here, and this gets threaded to your heart to the superior vena cava, and it delivers, it's a lifeline actually for mostly for cancer patients. It's a lifeline for chemo, meds, and nutrients. There's about 5,000 catheter-related lines that get infected annually in the United States. That catheter-related bloodstream infections or central line-associated bloodstream infections is a very serious event. You can die from it. So the only standard of care that exists for when a catheter gets infected is to surgically remove that catheter and then replace it somewhere else. A lot of times when it's replaced, it'll be replaced in the groin area, it gets threaded back up. There are complications associated with that procedure, and there's extreme pain, including psychological symptoms that can result from catheter removal. The cost of two surgical procedures, we believe, is in excess of $10,000, and the cost overall to treat just catheter-related bloodstream infections can go as high as $65,000. It's a if a patient comes down with usually the first signs of it is a fever, the patient has to be hospitalized in the ICU almost immediately. So with Mino-Lok, and Mino-Lok was invented by Dr. Issam Raad from MD Anderson Hospital. He's the chief of infectious disease. He worked for a long, long time to find the ideal combination of antibiotics for this. And one of his goals was in establishing or coming up with this solution is to make sure that you don't compromise the flow of IV. So you don't want to put the solution in and have it sit for hours. So he came up with a methodology that we thought really worked well, and that is this. So what happens is the nurse will come in, inject the catheter, and it'll fill up the catheter along with the line. The line gets hemodynamically locked. So the solution does not go into the body. I need to highlight this again. So it sits there for 2 hours. At the end of 2 hours, The nurse comes back in, aspirates out the contents, flushes the line, and the patient has 22 hours of uninterrupted IV flow as a result of this procedure. So this is done 5 to 7 days in a row. At the end of that time frame, that line is completely sterilized, including any biofilm that may have formed on the inner walls of the catheter. Biofilm happens to be bacterial slime, putting it bluntly. And the bacteria has an affinity for the plastic, and that's why that occurs. So, but at the end of that time frame, that line is completely sterilized and completely clean. So this was the phase 2B data that we took to the FDA with us. As you can see, we had, as compared to remove, it was middle lock arm was compared to a remove and replace arm. And as you can see, we had no complications whatsoever with the middle lock arm versus about an 18% complication rate for remove and replace. So we went to, it took some time. We had some hurdles in here to work because nobody had any real experience with a protocol with this drug, not at the FDA, not anywhere. So basically, what we came up with the FDA was to do a comparison of the Minilock solution to what I call a homebrew solution, and that is this. There are certain patients that a remove and replace can't be done because they no longer have access points left, and so the hospital will try anything then to see if it can salvage that catheter by mixing a brew, mixing an antibiotic-based solution in the hospital. A lot of times it contains vancomycin, and that's the comparator arm that was used. The primary endpoint, again, was time to catheter failure, and basically the trial got completed. As you can see, I highlighted that information before. So with that, what happened also with the FDA strongly encouraged us to file for QIDP status, which stands for Qualified Infectious Disease Product. And with that, we get a review time of 6 months instead of the normal 12 months that a drug gets when they apply for an approval. And we get an additional 5 years of market exclusivity, which is something really important. And the reason being is it's better than patent protection. And the reason being is that the 5 years gets added on top of the 4 years plus that you get with Hatch-Waxman when you're first approved. So we'll have somewhere between 9 and 10 years of complete regulatory protection. The generic company cannot come in and file what's known as a paragraph 4 and challenge your patent as a result of that. So it's a great plus for us to have. We have fast track, and then in Europe we have something called supplementary protection certificate, which extends our patent protection up to 5 years. So Lymphir is our IL-2 drug that we have for cutaneous T-cell lymphoma. It's a purified reformulation of denileukin diffitox, which was previously on the market, had been approved by the agency, and then taken off the market voluntarily by Eisai Pharmaceuticals at the time when the agency, as a condition of their approval, had said, you have to remove unfolded proteins from this formulation. And Eisai ran into an inventory issue because a plant was being shut down. They had to get the work done, so they decided to take the drug off the market, do the reformulation work. They go back to the agency with the reformulation data and are told that, sorry, but you have a new drug and you've got to redo a phase 3 trial with a lead-in, which occurred in 2014. This condition, cutaneous T-cell lymphoma, is a hard indication to study in because it takes a long time to get it completed. So what is it? As you can see here, it involves the skin. The one part, the plaque stage, as you see there, is more or less treated by dermatologists initially because that's what it appears like. But if you move to the tumor stage, then you can see what happens. This is a potentially disfiguring. It can be on your face, and sometimes it does strike there. So it's incurable, more prevalent in men than women, and usually occurs in your 50s and 60s. So we have a unique mechanism of action that will play an important role in something else that we're looking down the road at, and that is that we bind to the IL-2 receptors to deliver that diphtheria toxin, killing tumor cells directly, but also, most importantly, we eliminate immunosuppressive Tregs, which has an implication when it comes to combining it with another drug. So the market itself, we think, like I said, about $300 to $400 million. The two top competitors are in here are from Seagen and Kowa Kirin, the Japanese company, Adcetris, and Podalego. So the beauty of having these two competitors on the market right now is this. It allowed us to do a deep dive into this market segment. We know we've identified every prescriber. We know where everybody is. We know who's writing what. We've already laid out all the territories. It is a small universe, somewhere between 500 to 2,000 treaters only in the United States, and all we need is about 20 sales reps to cover the whole area. So this was the trial that was done. It was as you can see, 71 patients, the main trial, and then there was a lead-in study of 21. So the objective response rate, the results, by the way, were very similar to what was achieved with this drug in its initial approval. So 36.2% objective response rate, and nearly half the patients experienced a complete response, partial response, or durable stable disease. So reduced skin burden, 84.4%, rapid response time of 1.4 months. So there were no new safety signals from that trial as compared to the original trial. Capillary leak syndrome, 6%, infusion reaction, 6%, and that was about it. So something I want to highlight here, it goes back to that mechanism of action that I highlighted before, and that is that we reduce Tregs. And so as a result, we ran an animal trial in mice where we compared the combination of Lymphir with a checkpoint inhibitor. A checkpoint inhibitor is something like what Keytruda is, and we compared a combination to each of those separately. That study, which was done in mice, determined, clearly showed that the combination was superior to the two ingredients by themselves. So we have an opportunity for growth here with Lymphir. One is PTCL, which is a much wider indication, peripheral T-cell lymphoma. Eisai already has this approved in Japan, so we should be able to piggyback with some of that data, hopefully. We also have an upside opportunity, and it's this, in something known as immuno-oncology. So what's happened over the past year, an investigator at the University of Pittsburgh applied for an investigator IND. That's something, a mechanism that the FDA has. Doctors or PhDs in research institutions can apply to the FDA to study unapproved uses. So most of the time, they're combinations of drugs. So this investigator on his own applied for the FDA to study our drug combined with Keytruda. And specifically. So basically, that trial is underway. The reason why it has an implication here that could be potentially positive for us is that the overall performance of Keytruda is impacted by the number of Tregs in the cancer cell that it generates. So basically, the goal is to reduce the Tregs, because with the reduction of the Tregs in Keytruda, that would provide much better efficacy profile for Keytruda in the process. We'll know something about this trial probably towards the end of the summer. And if there is any positive data there, I think it could be significant for the company. But I can't comment on it right now because it's not our trial. It's that investigator's trial. We provide with the drug. We don't know what the outcome is going to be yet. So, and the same thing is true on the other one that was filed at the University of Minnesota, where the investigators there are looking at this, combining Lymphir with CAR-T, another form of new form of cancer treatment. So the good news on that is that we're out there, we're visible, we're in the marketplace, we're being recognized for what we have here in this cancer universe as far as a breakthrough drug is concerned. So The dynamics here are positive. There's no curative therapeutics, as I said, in the marketplace. The concentrated prescriber base is really critical, and we've got real good exclusivity and protection here because of the fact this drug is extremely difficult to manufacture, and we have a complex exclusivity set up with this. We think the upside potential could be phenomenal. So with that, just very quickly, we announced that we would be spinning off and we were going to place Lymphere into a sub. That sub is going to be acquired by a SPAC. We expect all that to take place, that the SPAC or the new entity will be called Citius Oncology, Inc. That'll start to take place somewhere probably towards the end of May or maybe even in June. And with that, that'll allow us to raise funds to market Lymphere without diluting the Citius shareholders. So Halo Lido, we're in an interaction process with the FDA on the data that we've submitted. It's going to be a back and forth process that'll take several months. In terms of where we are now, 158 million shares outstanding, 50 million warrants, 17 million options. We have a diversified late stage portfolio here. There's not many companies that can stand up in front of you and say they've got a PDUFA date followed by another drug that's already got a top-line data readout. So with that, I thank you for your time and your attention. Any questions? If we have time.
Just one. For Mino-Lok, is your anticipated indication for new placements or replacement catheters after an infection?
I think that the question is, what's the indication for Mino-Lok going to look like, whether it's a replacement or a replacement for new catheters? So basically, Mino-Lok, no, we are about salvaging the catheters. So basically, part of that indication is going to read that the catheter itself does not have to be subjected to a remove and replace. So it's keeping that catheter intact. Any other questions?
The separation of the two entities, that deal's done?
That deal, the question is, the separation of the two entities, Citius Pharmaceuticals and Citius Oncology, Inc., we have S-4 documents that have been filed with the SEC on that. We're going through a whole process. It's been announced. So once the SEC rules on it and it'll start to trade, that's when it'll be official. So and we're anticipating, like I said, May-June time frame for that at this point. Any other questions?
Yes. Is that when we're going to get a record date?
There's no record date on that because I think what you're asking about is whether or not we intend to do a distribution of shares to the shareholders on that. That's something that it is our intention to do that. We plan that. That's somewhere down a road, but it won't be right away. It'll be a distribution of the spun-off company shares to the Citius shareholders. Any other questions?
Is there a formula for the breakdown of that split?
I think the formula would be whatever your proportionate holdings are, that's how it would be distributed.
One for one?
Well, I don't know if it's one for one. I think we'd have to look at it because there may be a lot of small shareholders, so we got to account for that. We have, just so most people probably don't realize this, but we do have 60,000 retail shareholders in the company right now. So that's a lot of shares that we're going to have to account for. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate your time.